the Rebel Room, and we have a packed house today. Mike Grimala and Ray Brewer, both in here alongside me, Case Kiefer, to break down UNLV's 30-14 loss at Northwestern heading into a bye week. It was a game Tony Sanchez said was winnable, and Ray Brewer even more vehemently said that it was a game they gave away. So, Mike, where do you stand on that? Is this a game UNLV should have won?
It's a game that they could have won, should have. Probably a little strong just considering, you know, they're on the road and all that stuff. But Tony Sanchez, he used a phrase, or the way he put it after the game was, you know, to win some of these games in the past, UNLV has sort of had to play above their heads and, like, play a great, like, you know, just play out of their minds in order to steal a game like that. But he didn't think they had to play above their head to win that game. And I sort of agree. If they had just played a normal, you know, good football game for them, they probably would have come out of there with a win. It was right there. It's just a couple of, you know, misses on third down, a couple of times the offense couldn't really execute, and some unforced errors, and that's really what it was. Should have, maybe a little too strong, but definitely could have 50-50, maybe even a little bit greater in the Rebels' favor. So it's a tough one to let get away.
Yeah, UNLV's Power 5 opponents in the Sanchez five-year tenure, the Rebels seem to always play good when they play, whether it's at USC or Michigan and this past weekend at Northwestern. Now, of course, when they play teams that they're on even filled with, they've sometimes struggled. But I thought they didn't do anything to embarrass themselves. They had some they played great on defense, I thought, right? If you're grading out the defense, I think they flew around. They did a good job. They contained some things. They just whether it was a first half fumble on that little screen pass to Williams or that interception by Rodgers in the second half, they just really, you know, let some chances slip through. And when you're a team that's a 20-point underdog like UNLV was, you can't give the opposing team any extra help.
Yeah, that screen pass fumble that was Tyree Jackson, which is noteworthy because it was the first time he had touched the ball since that. He took that intentional safety in week one against Southern Utah, and he didn't play last week, and then they put him in against Northwestern for that screen pass, and he immediately fumbled. So it may be a while before you see him again. But, yeah, it was just all game things like that. Like that play that you mentioned, that fumble, UNLV had just picked up a 4th-and-1 with an Armani Rodgers sneak. So they had some momentum. They were, I think, at the 21-yard line or just outside the red zone. So they were going in for a score at that point. And you get a 1st-and-10, and the screen pass was picking up yards, and then you fumble the ball and lose it. Things like that, like unforced plays, just taking points directly off the board. Sometimes they just can't get out of their own way, and that seems to be the common theme in the last few years, and including this season.
I guess if you're looking for positives, I know a guy, I can't remember Brewer, but maybe it was just Mike and I on that podcast, but we were unanimously high on Charles Williams, and he's continued to produce 144 yards on 16 carries. And like you said, they had their opportunities. So maybe, you know, you take a step forward or two on the bye week and going into Mountain West Conference play, which really is going to matter. Certainly, it feels like the feeling is a little bit better after this loss than the Arkansas State defeat.
Yeah, but I feel like you're at the point, the players and especially the coaching staff, like moral victories mean nothing at this point. Like, I don't know if you can go out of there holding your head high, you know, getting on the bus at Northwestern, like, hey, we played hard. We showed that we're improving. Like, that stuff really doesn't matter anymore. Like, right? Don't you reach that point? Like, at especially now when it's basically you've got to make a bowl or you know that the staff is being replaced.
I'm just trying to be the positive one for once.
Oh no, I'm not taking a positive or negative stance. I'm just saying, like, moral victories. Yeah, last year if they had done something like this early in the season, you know, you get a game like this where you play well and Charles Williams, the running game is cooking, and you're making big defensive plays. I mean, they made some great defensive plays. They got some big stops. That would be a positive thing. It's not last. This is a new season. This for this season in particular, you really don't get much out of the moral victories. So I don't know how much of that carries over 2 weeks from now after the bye week. I don't really think it counts for much.
And of course, the big talk going into this game was, you know, after the Arkansas State game where Coach Sanchez said he would be open to a new quarterback and that basically this wasn't just Armani Rodgers' job. Armani Rodgers had kind of an Armani Rodgers-like game against Northwestern. Pretty effective on the ground, it looks like, and just a really low efficiency clip passing. Does that whole storyline, competition, whatever you want to call it, kind of bubble into the bye week? How big of a role is that going to play over the next 13 days before UNLV plays again?
You know, leading up to the game, I had kind of, based on what Tony Sanchez has said and what we'd seen in practice and what he was saying about the way that they were going to handle it against Northwestern, I had sort of come to the conclusion that Tony Sanchez putting it out there immediately after the Arkansas State loss, that the quarterback competition was open. I think that was mostly just a motivational ploy, basically. He wanted that to jumpstart Armani Rodgers for some reason. Like, Armani, he just didn't have it against Arkansas State. It wasn't there. He played maybe his worst game. I think that was pretty much just Tony Sanchez, like, sending a shot across his bow, like, hey, pick it up, or we have this guy we're willing to give him a shot. I don't think they ever had any intention of really playing Kenyon Oblad in this game, or there were chances when they could have put him in, you know, in the fourth quarter when they once you go away from Charles Williams in the running game and you say, we're going to have to win this game throwing the ball, that's when you would, you know, make a move to Oblad, because Rodgers isn't going to win a game throwing. And they didn't do that, which leads me to believe that Rodgers is still the guy. He's going to be the guy. He's going to be the starting quarterback throughout the bye week and probably for the rest of the season. The coaching staff is going to ride with him.
Kind of reminds me of how they handled Lexington Thomas last year.
Yeah.
He kind of called out Lex a little bit. Obviously, Lexington was your best offensive player. And it was a guy that had been in the program long enough to where he could respond to maybe some public criticism. And I think Tony probably feels the same way about Armani, that, you know, this is a guy, he's put his entire coaching career at UNLV on the line with. And you might as well finish it out with him and go from there.
And I certainly wouldn't question Tony's tactics. I mean, seems like it was totally reasonable, and I'm sure what you guys are saying were right, but did it backfire in a way, just because, you know, and I'm kind of on the cursory, just out here looking, you know, from the periphery, but it seemed like once he said that, I saw a lot of support for Kenyon Oblad, surprisingly, on social media, when there's like such a frustration with the fan base, I think, especially at the biggest position at quarterback. I think people are, you know, kind of sick of seeing stat lines like 16 for 26 for 120 yards. So on Saturday, I was seeing people like, we want to see Oblad. So did it backfire in a way?
Well, no, I don't think Sanchez expected there to be no support for Oblad. Like, that cliche is a cliche for a reason. Like, the backup quarterback is always the most popular guy on the team. If you open up the quarterback competition, there's never going to be, you know, zero people saying, yeah, we want, like, it's not going to be 100% for the back. People always want to see the backup quarterback play. So it's like, you know, that's going to happen, especially because he's a local kid. And he's sort of got that built-in fan base of people who know him and that name recognition. So I think that was part of the calculation. And maybe even it carries more of a threat than if, say, Max Gillum hadn't been injured and he was your number two. And Tony had said, you know, maybe we got to play Max a little bit more. It might not have carried the same amount of pop as a threat, you know, that suggesting Oblad did, because, you know, Oblad is going to have that groundswell of support. So maybe that gets to Armani Rodgers a little bit more and sort of sparks his play. It's funny, though, that you said fans are sick of the 16 for 26, because that's like, that's one of his better games. Well, that's kind of,
I was just reading, issue. I was just reading off his stats, but I mean, I guess I was getting at, I should have said, what is that? I mean, yards per pass attempt below 5 yards. That's just not good. Maybe I just should have used that. Yeah. Not the actual.
Yeah, it's number. I think that sort of gets to the point that the passing game is just giving them almost nothing, and that's the issue. Like, it's the running game works for against, you know, some opponents. The passing game never works against really anyone. So that's sort of the issue. Is that's why you're considering the quarterback change. But then the question that you've been having, Ray, over the past week is like, what happens to the running game if Armani's not the quarterback? Because we've seen that drop off before.
Yeah, and you might be shocked to hear this if you've listened to this podcast before, but I think I would have to totally agree with Brewer in that sense. And I think out of us, I've been at least a little bit anti-Armani as compared to you guys probably. I've yelled at Brewer so many times in the offseason when he declared him the best quarterback in the Mountain West, which I would still do, but I think we could probably all agree. I don't feel like UNLV... I don't see a way they could improve under Kenyon Oblad. I think if you have to win this season, which you do have to win this season, I think, like Brewer said, Tony is kind of stuck. He has to stick his coaching career at UNLV on Armani Rodgers.
Yeah, and I mean, you could see signs of the program getting better. I mean, defensively, they haven't been probably this good in 10 years. I mean, I can't remember a defense that played like UNLV played on Saturday. It's just, you know, you're not going to be able to – you don't like that comment?
I would pump the brakes a little bit because Northwestern's really struggling on offense. This was not a good offense. I'm not saying UNLV's defense isn't better. Certainly they're better, but the Arkansas State game was a fiasco.
I would say that UNLV has two excellent defensive players. It's Javen White and it's Rashad Jackson. If the play involves them, if they're in the play, UNLV has a good defense. If they're not involved in the play, like if the offense throws the ball somewhere else or they run to the opposite side of the field or if they those guys aren't involved, it's still pretty much the same UNLV defense. They have two good guys who can make things happen. So, that, I mean, that sort of gives them a chance sometimes. So it is a little bit different, but is that good enough?
Yeah, I don't know. I think moving forward, they got 13 days to get ready for Wyoming. Wyoming, they struggled. I don't know their score on
21-16 against Idaho. They have got to be the luckiest 3-0 team in the country. I mean, the Missouri game was one of the ultimate flukes. Great on them for winning it. Then Texas State, I think by an efficiency standpoint, Texas State was better than them. Then Idaho, who lost 70-7 to Penn State 2 weeks ago, played with them. I think this spot actually sets up really well for UNLV. Now, it is a tough place to play up there, but Wyoming, despite its 3-0 record, has really not been very impressive this year, and they go to Tulsa this week while UNLV gets a rest. So I think from a situational standpoint, this one sets up pretty well for the Rebels.
I totally agree, and it's a must win. I mean, we've said that 1,000 times in the last whatever years with UNLV football, but, you know, start 1-0 in league, go get beat up by Vandy, and then, you know, you got Fresno and Boise, you got to beat Fresno. I mean, that's the situation you're in.
Yeah, Arkansas State was a must win, in my opinion. So losing that, you're so far behind track to get to those six wins makes Wyoming is just even more so. It's like if it really does feel like this is the referendum game. If you win it, you're 2-2, and even though you're still behind track to get the six wins, it's tough to see four more wins on the schedule. You still have a chance, and you can still sell out to your players. You can keep them engaged. They're still excited about it. If you lose and you're down to 1-3 with the schedule coming up, that's, you know, it starts to get dreary looking ahead. And that's when players will start to look ahead because they hear the outside noise. They know the situation with the coaching staff. They know everything that's going on. So it's going to be hard to get them to focus and not look ahead. And that's when seasons really start to get out of hand, is when, you know, there's really nothing left to play for. But there's still 8 games left on the schedule. That's a long time to be playing.
And you only got to go, 5-3.
If you win this one, yes, I guess that's correct. Well, 5-3 then, if you're 2-2, that, I mean, you don't even have to go 5-3, right?
Saying if you lose this game.
Oh, yeah, my bad. I can't count the 12.
If I don't, you say only 5-3. When do you think there was the last stretch when UNLV went 5-3 over 8 games? Did they do that the Caleb Herring year? Was there an 8-game stretch where they went 5-3?
They may have. I mean, again, something magical has to happen for this to work. Okay, for this current era of UNLV football, the new era, if you will, something has got to fit. They got to beat somebody they're not supposed to, which, you know, you got to beat Wyoming, Fresno, Hawaii, San Jose, and Reno.
When you put it like that, like something magical has to happen, just from a narrative sense, like when you look at the big picture, if you try to look at it, like say, you know, in hindsight, after it happens, don't you think that like screams quarterback change? Like if you just need something magical to happen and like the season to turn on a dime, doesn't it seem like the most obvious way for that to happen is to like make a change at QB and hope that everything falls into place and you catch lightning in the bottle and he's just hot and you win like 4 games in a row, just slamming it around.
I mean, that's what happened the year when they went to the Heart of Dallas Bowl.
Yeah, that's probably the number one most.
But who did he replace? Nick Sherry, I believe.
Yes, Nick Sherry.
So I think you have to ask yourself, though, Armani Rodgers is 100 times better than Nick Sherry, and Caleb Herring was more seasoned and better than Kenny Noblad.
That's true.
It's not a swap.
Yeah, it's not an apples-to-apples comparison. I'm just saying, like, I'm speaking from, like, a meta sense, like, in the grand scheme of things, like, in the – like, in when you're just – football in general, the number one move that probably most correlates to turning a season around is probably a quarterback change, and you get good play from your whoever you make the move to.
Yeah, certainly that would be the most obvious and the number one, but I guess – then should I ask? I mean, they have – 2 weeks, as we've said over and over, to get ready for what's a huge game at Wyoming. Is there any other magic they can get brewing in this time? I mean, maybe, and I wasn't saying Brewer was wrong earlier. I was just saying I'm still skeptical because I don't think Northwestern's very impressive on offense. But maybe you take, a defense that showed some signs on Saturday. Maybe they shore some things up and they come out even better at Wyoming. They gel. I mean, I guess, is that a reasonable type of magic brewing? Or is there any other way we can see with Armani still there that they can muster up some magic? See,
for me, Wyoming's a coin flip game and they got to win it. But for me, they got to beat Vandy, Boise, or Fresno. Three games we expect them to lose to make it fit.
It's hard to see it with just, as you say, with if they're a 1-3 team, is incremental improvement on the offensive line going to turn you into a 5-3 team over the last 8 games? Or is if you're 1-3, is, you know, better play in the secondary going to transform you into a 5-3 team over the last 8 games? I don't think so. Like, I don't think incremental improvements in those sort of less important areas are really going to transform your team like that. Quarterback's pretty much the only thing that can do it. So either the
or turnover luck.
Yeah, turnover luck, just absolutely, and you recover every fumble. But either Armani Rodgers, the light's going to have to go on, and he's going to have to play like he did against UNR last year. He's going to have to play like that for 8 games in a row, which we've only seen him do for one half in his career, or they're going to have to get that kind of play from another quarterback, whether it's Oblad or Gillum or something. Like, something's got to change dramatically if you want them to flip the switch from 1-3 to 5-3 over the last 8 games. It's
when Gillum comes back, is he your 2, or is Oblad the clear 2 now?
It's hard to say. Like,
Say. You were just advocating for Oblad to get in.
I'm just speaking as devil's advocate. I'm not taking one side or the other. It's just that those two were sort of going to fight it out in training camp for that number 2 spot. I think Gillum went in with the advantage, having played last year. But when Gillum had that injury, it sort of short-circuited that battle. So that we never really saw the culmination of those two guys duking it out in training camp. Oblad got it by default. But Oblad has done nothing to give that job back in the meantime. Like, he got into the first 2 games, and he looked great in the time that he was in there. So, like, if I had to pick one right now, I'd probably say Oblad.
I mean, it's hard to – if he's had several more weeks of time to build a – gap between him and Gillum, so it's hard to say that he wouldn't be ahead unless he's, you know, struggled a little bit more than we believe. So I think Oblad would have to be the favorite, but that adds another wrench into watching this, into seeing what happens. I'm sure we'll be back next week to discuss this Wyoming game further. Some interesting times in Rebel land. Any parting thoughts before we get out of here?
I would say the only other way that UNLV could see them be transforming themselves is if they just give themselves completely over to the running game. Like against Northwestern, you saw Charles Williams, 132 yards on 12 carries in the first half. He only got 4 carries in the second half. Like, if you become just a complete running team where you give him 30 carries a game and you're only throwing it in 3rd and 10 situations, like, maybe that can be something that you can – give you some momentum going forward.
And put in the wishbone and you're like Air Force.
Yeah, like completely change up your offense. Like, Armani's throwing it 20 times a game now. If you cut that down to like 8 times a game, like, we're only throwing bombs in obvious like 3rd and 10 situations. And the rest of the time, we're just going to run it down your throat no matter what. 3rd and 6 handoff, 3rd and 7 handoff. Maybe that changes things for you. But other than that, it's like this is the offense that I think the coaches want to ride with, and they're just going to hope that it turns around at some point.
That would I love Brewers' wishbone theory. That'd be something I would never get behind in like 99.5% of situations, but I think it would be amazing if they came out in Wyoming in the wishbone and ran the ball.
They have the personal 90%. For it.
No, they do. That's why just the situation. I think I can get behind this.
And I mean, Armani got sacked 6 times against Arkansas State. He got sacked 5 times against Northwestern. So it's like every time you call a drop back, you're either he's putting the ball in jeopardy with interceptable passes, or he's getting sacked for loss of yardage. I mean, it's at some point, you know, you might be better off running an option or a pitch on third and long. So, I mean, I don't think that's a complete desperation move, though. I don't know if the coaching staff is quite ready to call it that yet.
No, I think they're going to just try to play regular football and go from there.
All right, regular football, and we'll see if that leads to any success for the Rebels. For Mike and Ray, I'm Case. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week to dive further into the matchup at Wyoming.